Hey Dhamma friends, so we have come to the next part of this mindfulness for young adult session. So we are now actually talking on a particular sutta that is available in Anguttara Nikaya, and that is called Sati Sampajanya Sutta. As the name implies, it talks about mindfulness and how mindfulness and clear comprehension leads to some deeper understanding. So here, in a way, Buddha talking on a very systematic way, where kind of a cause and effect relationship is introduced here, as a one cause leads to another result. Then that becomes a cause to another result. Then that result becomes to a cause for another result. So likewise, it's a kind of a stepwise process. So mindfulness and clear comprehension leads to moral shame and moral dread. So this is something interesting, where we sometimes think, so in order to have moral shame and moral dread, how mindfulness and clear comprehension could cause? So it might not be apparent. But when we are closely looking at how mindfulness is improved, what are the procedures that we are undertaking, various practices that we are undertaking, and what is the impact on the mind, so then we can prove that mindfulness has a clear indication or direction towards the moral shame and moral dread. Because as we become more self-aware, as we become more and more sensitive, more and more awakeful, so there we are vigilant, and we can see what are the sort of trends appearing in our mind. What are the sorts of unwholesome qualities that is going to appear in our mind? So when such is present, then we can say, am I going to do this? Is it suitable for this? Is it suitable for me? So am I going to break a precept? So likewise, we can actually question ourselves, rather than immediately reacting to the situations. We can step back and look at ourselves and what is really going on. We can question ourselves. So this only can happen when we develop mindfulness. So as we develop mindfulness, we get that sort of a capacity, that sort of a skill, where the immediate reaction can be stopped, can be avoided. And we are not now impulsively reacting, rather when a sort of a reaction going to happen in the mind, so we can be aware of it. We can actually check it. Actually, Buddha gives another simile. Assume that there's a huge water flow, kind of a flooding. And assume that somehow people are able to make a dam. So because of this dam, now this water flow being stopped, being checked. So likewise, Buddha mentioned, so our mind is going through some sort of a flood, what we call as the flood of defilements, and that flood can be stopped by means of mindfulness. So once the break of mindfulness is applied, so this, the flooding of the defilements are stopped. But Buddha further mentions that in order to completely uproot this generated defilement, one has to apply wisdom. So the mindfulness and wisdom at that level operates hand in hand, operates together, where the mindfulness check the flooding, check the defilements, stop the defilements, and then wisdom comes and evaporates it. Wisdom comes and completely removes it. So there we can call it as satipanya, kind of mindfulness and wisdom working together. Before that, we are getting sati sampajanya, we are mindfulness and clear comprehension working together. So for example, when you are being mindful of breathing, at the beginning it's a matter of being aware of in-breath, being aware of out-breath. So you don't know much about it. But now your mindfulness is improving. You are not staying at the same level, so slowly, gradually, your mindfulness is improving. As your mindfulness improves, so we can say, now you can be aware of 10 in-breaths, be aware of 10 out-breaths, be aware of 20 in-breaths, 20 out-breaths. So likewise, now you can see there's a continuity, there's a kind of a sustenance of attention. So these kind of qualities are now slowly developing. You can comparatively understand there are certain capacities, certain skills being developed because of this practice. Now assume that now you are quite confident that I can maintain mindfulness for quite a long time. For 15 minutes I can be mindful. For 20 minutes I can be mindful. For 30 minutes I can be mindful. I can maintain mindfulness. So with that confidence, then Buddha asks us to go to the next level. Don't just be mindful. Now try to inquire what is really going on. Onto which that you become mindful, now you inquire what is really going on. You are going to examine it. You are going to investigate it. Then we are introducing this clear comprehension. So whatever is under your scrutiny, now you are revealing that information. Now you are very clearly comprehending the details. So now you are seeing from various angles. You are revealing various behaviors of whatever the phenomena under our investigation. So this is how we are introducing clear comprehension, sampajanya, to the picture. So this is very necessary. Say for example, if you are practicing Vedanupassana, at the beginning it's a matter of establishing mindfulness on various feelings. It may be, say, happy feelings, pleasurable feelings, it may be painful feelings, it may be equanimous feelings. So we further recognize them. We simply recognize them rather than sort of identifying them, thinking that this happy feeling belongs to me, I want to have it more, I want to have it tomorrow, I want to possess it. Like that, you are not going to hold it, you are not grasping it. Rather, you are able to see pleasurable feeling as pleasurable feeling. Similarly, when you are going through some painful feeling, you are able to recognize, okay, this is a painful feeling. I don't need to reject it. I don't need to be afraid of it. I don't need to try to get rid of it. But rather, it's a kind of a guest for me to improve mindfulness, for me to improve wisdom. So you are looking it in that angle, sort of matured way. Yeah, now you are examining the painful feeling. You start to examine the painful feeling because you are able to properly establish mindfulness on that. Similarly, if you consider the, say, equanimous feeling. So typically we ignore it. We are not completely aware of the equanimous feelings. But now you are able to recognize an equanimous feeling. So say for example, breathing was completely neglected. You don't know that you are breathing. Only when assume that you become sick due to some respiratory issue, lung issue, or you drown in water, then only you need to understand, okay, I have to breathe. Continuously, body has taken care of it. But now we are trying to be conscious about breathing. It's a very neutral activity. So you will understand, okay, this is a sort of a neutral activity. So this is called the neutral feeling. So when I am experiencing breathing, the feeling tone attached to it is the equanimity, equanimous feeling. So now you recognize this equanimous feeling. Equanimous feeling is equanimous feeling. Painful feeling is painful feeling. Pleasurable feeling is pleasurable feeling. So you are quite detached from it, disengaged from it. You are not grasping any of them, and you are able to recognize them. So now the mindfulness has properly established. Now you got to examine it very closely. You got to investigate it very closely. There you are introducing clear comprehension. There you will understand, okay, this pleasurable feeling, though it appear like a single pleasurable feeling, it's not. It is a combination of so many minute pleasurable feelings. Even though this painful feeling appear like a single pain, when I am closely observing it, carefully investigating it, you will understand, okay, it is a combination of so many minute painful feelings. Similarly, when you observe equanimous feeling, you will understand, even though it has a sort of a boring feeling, so it has some very minute equanimous feelings, combination or group of equanimous feelings. So now this is where you are with some high resolution, you are with some clear comprehension. So more you develop this sort of a skill, so you become fairly vigilant, you become fairly diligent and very sharp, and your mindfulness also quite strong, and you are fully aware of what is going on right now. You are fully self-conscious. On such situation, it's difficult to do something wrong, difficult to do something bad, unwholesome, because your mind is quite sensitive. Mind will question you, is it suitable for you? Is it suitable for you, a person like you? Isn't it going to degrade your meditation? Isn't it going to impact when you sit, when you go to do walking session? Because all these the behaviors that we entertain during the outside of the meditation has a great impact when you sit, great impact when you are trying to develop mindfulness. So now you are fairly conscious, concerned about how you are maintaining your life. So that actually introduce restraint of the sense faculties. So now you are carefully restraining your sense faculties. Now you understand, okay, if I misuse eyes, so much of defilement is going to be developed. If I am going to misuse ears, so that has a big impact on my meditation, on my life. If I misuse my tongue, my nose, my body, my mind, so there is a great impact on my mental well-being. So you will feel it. So as you feel it, so actually we can take a little bit more here. So Buddha mentioned, Indriya Sangvare Sati, Indriya Sangvare Sampannasa, Upanishad Sampanno Hoti Sila. Now we are going to the next step. When one is quite guarding the senses, so that actually leads to the proper sila, proper morality. So this is in a way different aspects of the morality. You know, there are different sides of morality. Indriya Sangvara Sila is one aspect. So Patimokkha Sangvara is another aspect. Ajiva Parishuddha Sila is another aspect. So these are different components of the Sila of a monk. And so say for example Patimokkha Sila. So this is the various precepts included in the Bhikkhu Vinaya. And if we come to the lay level, lay people's point of view, now there are five precepts. So these are the sort of theories, these are the precepts that you have to be concerned. And when you are doing that, so then you are trying to be adhere to those precepts for your own benefit, not because they are the commandments, or not because that others are going to blame you or harm you or penalize you, but rather you understand, okay, these are quite valuable, these are quite helpful. As a human being, it is really worthy of respecting them, protecting them. So you are protecting those five precepts. And not only that, you are now trying to guard your senses, Indriya Sangvara Sila. Guard your senses. Now Buddha very clearly mentioned how a noble disciple guard the doors, or guard the doors of his sense faculties. So this is very beautifully mentioned in Seka Sutta. On seeing a form with the eye, a noble disciple does not grasp at its signs and features. Now you know, when you look at something, immediately there are certain components, there are certain marks catches your eyes. So those are the sort of signs, those are much attractive. We'll take a very simple example. Assume that a young woman being a young girl being watched by, seen by a young man. So at that time, there may be certain features, certain marks, immediately catches the mind. So immediately the eye goes and search for that. Eye goes and look for those marks, those signs. So those are the nimittas. Those are the signs. And similarly, there are certain signs and features. There may be minor, little other features as well. Now, if one continues like this, now he is searching those features, appreciating those features, and delighted about those features, attached with those features, what happens is now various defilements going to develop in the mind. Those were not present previously, but because of this sight, now unarisen defilements are going to develop, are going to arise. Because he didn't guard his eyes. His eyes opened and he has seen someone. And there are various beautiful signs are there, marks are there, features are there. Now his eyes are quite searching them, focused to them, and delighted with them. And now the defilements are arousing. Now the mind become dispersed. Now the mind become again turbulent. Now again mind become agitated. Whatever the calmness, whatever the peacefulness, which was previously available in the mind, was now destroyed. Now, therefore Buddha mentions, if he left the eye faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. And he practices the way of its restraint, he guards the eye faculty. Now he understands, if I keep my eye faculty unguarded, again and again when I see something, see someone, this mind become again corrupted, mind become again polluted. Various defilements are going to arise. So let me guard my eye faculty. Now he is guarding his eye faculty. He restrains his eye faculty. Similarly, he restrained his ear faculty. He is not going to simply expose himself to various sounds. Rather, he is restraining his ears. Similarly, the nose, similarly the tongue, similarly the body, and similarly the mind. So he is restraining himself. So he undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. So this is how he is now guarding his senses. He is a little careful now. So how he is handling his sense faculties. He is not just using them just because he has money, he is a youth, he has enough friends or enough facilities. He is not going to use just because he has the capacity. But rather he is quite vigilant. What is going to happen because of this exposure? What is going to happen because of this opening or transaction happen between the outside world? Eye with forms, ear with sounds, nose with smells, tongue with taste, body with various tactile sensations, tangibles, and the mind with various mental objects. So these correspondence is now somewhat cautious. And as a result, since he is guarding his mind, then what happens is that he becomes somewhat calm down. His mind is not much getting polluted, not frequently getting polluted. He is able to maintain sort of a calm mind, relaxed mind, sort of a serene mind, because mind is not again and again disturbed. Mind could maintain its clarity, could maintain its serenity, tranquility, because we are not stimulating it from the outside. Outside stimulations are quite calmed down. They are fairly restrained and the faculties are well guarded. Therefore, he can maintain this sort of a calm mind for a long time. He is not going to certain unsuitable places just because he knows that if I go there, again mind become corrupted. Again my mind become polluted. So he is fairly concerned about it. Now, as a result, Buddha says, now there's a virtuous behavior. Now he got to behave properly. Otherwise his mind get polluted. Otherwise it again mind get agitated. So they are quite interlinked. Now mindfulness and clear comprehension shows him. So where are these turbulence happen? How eye has to be further guarded? What are the exact causes? How well I can further refine it? So clear comprehension explains it, or clear comprehension gives that facility. Because as you know, clear comprehension means that you can very clearly, very precisely look at the fine details. So you are applying that to the sila level, to the morality level. So that is why it is mentioned, anumattesu vajjesu bayadassavino. Even for a slightest mistake, slightest offense, he is afraid of. Because the mindfulness and clear comprehension shows him, indicates him, okay, these refinements you have to do. These areas still you are weak. Still you are not cautious about at this level. Still you are not mindful on these levels. Certain precepts are still quite not well protected. So likewise, so you are doing some sort of analysis, some sort of appraisal about your own sila. So therefore, you are further refining your sila. And for that refinement, for the improved sila, the necessary causes are now available. So the immediate cause is the restraint of the sense faculties. So now you are guarding the senses. So the sila can be easily maintained. You are not making the mind turbulent through the senses. You are not stimulating the mind through the senses. You are doing some sort of a guarding process, some sort of a restrainment. So the causes are there for you to maintain sila for a long time. And similarly, you are quite morally ashamed, morally fearful about breaking precepts. So that is also there. And again, your mind is quite vigilant, quite aware of what is going on, and you are able to see even subtle details. Mindfulness and clear comprehension are in effect. So these causes helps to further strengthen your morality, further improve your morality, to show what are the areas that you need to further develop, to pay attention. So this is how Buddha mentioned that Indriya Sangvare Sati, Indriya Sangvara Sampannassa Uparisa Sampanno Hoti Sila. So in order for you to maintain good sila, good morality, the necessary causes, proximate causes are now available. So that you have the proper ground. You are working on it. You are well grounded on it. Your sila is well grounded on it. So therefore you can maintain good sila. So this is how Buddha step by step going through this sutta, explained this sutta. So with that I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Now I like to pay attention to the questions, and I like to invite you to participate.
Question number one, the general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I noticed that I've projected the quality of arrogance in a commutation that happened, and I noticed it a day after. Then I remembered I had the same quality when I was a three-year-old, and my dad pointed it out to me then. Although I didn't understand why I am doing it, it was automatic. It has been around for a while, and the difference is that the items I have picked to project my arrogance unknowingly has changed over the life. As a teenager, then to the 20s to 30s. I'm fortunate I saw this now. I can stop it technically, meaning controlling the conversation and so on, which I do not want to go by. I want to fix it at its root cause, so that when the action is happening, it will take more of an organic form. My questions to you. So there's four questions. Number one, what is the cause for arrogance? I've given a definition on Google. Having or revealing an exaggerated sense of one's own importance or abilities. Number two, in what classification of defilement does this belong to? Number three, should I apologize to the person who has been read being part of that conversation, as I did not have an intention as such. And number four, what has Lord Buddha mentioned about this defilement? Any advice is much appreciated. Thank you very much for your great service today. Greatly appreciated. With metta, that's the end. If you need me to repeat any of those questions, please let me know.
Yeah, actually, this is good. I mean, basically, you are quite conscious about what is really going on. This is what we expected. So that is what, I mean, as you develop mindfulness, you become more conscious. You become quite vigilant. You become more concerned with what is really going on. And you feel even about another person. And you feel that how he may be behaving and how you being reacting. So it's a kind of awareness being developed onto the picture. Previously, we are not much aware of it. We simply blindly react to the situation. But now, we are able to look at from different angles. We are able to comprehend the complete picture. So that is what important. Otherwise, we are quite narrow-minded and only see maybe our own side and we can't look at the other person. But now, as we develop mindfulness, clear comprehension, so we are able to look at a question, look at a problem from many different angles. So we get the clear picture almost. So as you actually, these all questions, you got to answer basically. Because you are the ones, what are the indicating factors? Okay, why the mind get agitated? What are the exact reasons? For what causes actually it is happening? So is he sort of condemning me, look me down, or is he sort of more capable than me, therefore sort of a jealousy arising in myself, or is he sort of doing something irritated to me? So likewise, you got to see, depending on the situation, what are the exact causes for your agitation to happen. Because typically, once you see someone, such kind of agitation cannot happen. But now there's agitation happens. So what are the exact reasons? And on the other hand, whenever we go through some experience, we are projecting so much of preconceived ideas onto the picture. Preconceived concepts onto the picture. We all have a pile of signs, perceptions, attitudes, because of the upbringing, our culture, our learning, and all these things actually builds a kind of pile of likes and dislikes, our preferences, tendencies, all these things are there. Now, whenever you are going through any sort of an experience, so much of that influence is being sort of projected or injected into the experience. So with that you are experiencing. So your experience is fairly colored. It is not pure. So your experience is fairly conditioned, fairly colored. There's a great impact coming from your side. So with the same person to another colleague, may can deal very carefully, very without any problem. But for you, so with this particular person, there is a kind of an agitation. Because you may be projecting so much of preconceived idea, ideas onto the picture, so you are going to suffer. So therefore, you need to check in your own mind, so what are my additions? So how am I coloring the picture? How am I fabricating the picture? So what are the mental formations? So you got to find it out. You got to step back. You got to be aware. You got to be mindful. And now you are looking at the mind and recognizing, okay, what is really going on? What he really has done to me? Is it something long time ago something has done? Now I couldn't forgive. Again and again, I am refreshing it. Now that has become kind of a revenge. So now I am putting all these details onto this picture. So I am the one fabricating it. I am the one conditioning. I am the one coloring the picture. So now that kind of investigation if you could do, then most probably you are able to simply calm down yourself, to unentangle the situation. Rather than mentally construct so much of things, you may be able to sort of see the correct picture. What is the correct picture and what is your involvement? What is your conditioning? What is your fabrication onto the situation? So that you can recognize. So, are there any parts, Chatu, that I need to address in this session further? Do you think that I answered everything?
Yeah, probably. If the person wants to ask any more questions, they
Fine.
Can
Fine.
Put another one in. Question number 2 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, in the 10 fetters associated with enlightenment, there is an item called attachment to rituals and vow. Now, I know in ancient times in India, people used to follow various rituals such as behaving like cows and dogs and so on. However, I'm interested to know is, so there's 3 questions. Number one, in the modern world where I live now, is in Victoria, in Australia, what could possibly be the rituals and vows I'm caught up in? Number two, how can one identify the attachment for rituals and vows? Can you please give some pointers? Number three, are these carried through previous birth or things that were trained to us by parents and teachers? Can you please give some modern world examples for this? Your advice is much appreciated. Thank you and much merits with Metta. That's it.
Yeah, say for example, I can remember, sometime people like to get blessed. So you go to someone and you ask him or her to bless you. And you think that because of his blessing, so you maybe get cured. So you may get enlightened. So you may get the compassion from a, say, higher world, from a higher person, from the omniscient, God. So there, so likewise, sort of beliefs are there. And say that when you are constructing a house, that you are talking about various directions, various angles, how many doors, how many, say, rooms. So there are many things. And say sometimes, even today, I think in certain countries during the Chinese New Year, so they burn what you call the not the real currency notes, but some say the replicas of the currency notes. So those are, even today, those are available. And sometimes people are still having some sort of myth about the passed away relatives. They think that they are still living always with them and they always have to pass merits. True, you can pass merits, no problem. But I mean, too much of thinking about such things, especially, say for example, in among the Chinese community, there are a lot of such things like, so they consider the past relatives are like their gods and their protectors and all sort of things. So even today, therefore, we have such kind of attitudes. And similarly, say you are, even when you are going on a journey, assume that you go to in this direction, I have to put my right leg first, or I have to look at the right side first. So east is the most auspicious, not the west. So likewise, so much of things are there. So they were not simply available during the India, good old India, but even today. So people have these kind of many different aspects. And you yourself have to see, so am I become a victim of these things? So am I projecting something and expecting something on because of this? So we have to see, so are we maintaining some sort of a free mind, or do I think that I can liberate my mind, I can make my mind free by fulfilling certain other areas, other vows, say by getting someone's help, getting the compassion of an omniscient God, getting compassion from a certain, say, pusari or a kind of a father, or you know, you can say whatever it is. So those are different agents are there, who is doing the sort of combination or the transaction between you and the God. So, and you believe that this person, the middle agent, may do it properly. And you go to a, say, particular god. Say we go to Kataragama and there is a, what you call Kapua, the agent. And we give some money and, you know, the Palaturu Attiya, the... what you call the fruits, and then he pass all our sufferings to the God, and suffering is, sorry, the God is going to help us, help me. So all people are still going, and these are still available. Now we are in the 21st century, and we think, okay, by seeing my very precious, very fresh fruits basket, so this God is now going to help me. So you are basically with that kind of attitude. So these are all actually comes rites and rituals. So ultimately you simply neglect them. You simply discard them because these are not based on the real facts. These are not, I mean, there are more and more strength in yourself than expecting someone else's help. You yourself has the enough capacity to correct yourself. And whatever the challenges coming on your way are taken as challenges, not as sort of a weak, kind of a timid manner. Rather, you are now trying to face these challenges. You are not going to seek the help from a third agent, another agent. Rather, you are going through it. Let the challenge come on my way. Let me face it. So that is why it is mentioned very beautifully in the Aryavasa Sutta, yeah, Buddha mentions Eka Rakko Hoti. Katancha Bhikkave Eka Rakko Hoti, Satha Rakkena Bhikkave Viharati. Monks, what is this only protection? The single protection. Monks, this only protection, single protection is nothing but the mindfulness. So this is talking about the nobles. They are the noble people, you know, the Aryans, so they are not keeping another person as their protection. They are not keeping a bodyguard or any other god or third party or, say, omniscient god or anyone else. Rather, they consider mindfulness is my guardian. Mindfulness is the only protection. Mindfulness will tell me what is the next to do. What is the best answer for this problem, what is the best decision to be taken, and how I should behave. So they keep the mindfulness in front. So you can read Aryavasa Sutta, which is available in Anguttara Nikaya, and recently there's a book also published in Aryavasa Sutta that is available in Nisarnawane website, and actually it is in Sinhala. So you can read the first chapter. So there Buddha very beautifully mentions, so as you develop, as you become mature, so you keep mindfulness as your guarding factor, guardian, as your protector. You simply neglect all these external parties praying and expecting, pleading and asking for help, and that sort of attitude being dropped, and you become sort of powerful or strong internally, spiritually, to go through whatever the suffering. So that is the only way. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Vande, my question is about the desire for existence or Bhavatanda. When one identifies some tendencies as a desire for existence, how can I make sure that the identification itself will not be a cause for the craving for non-existence, Bhavatanda? Thank you much, merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Actually, Bhavatanha in the, say, long-term perspective, what you say is correct. So that may be that assume that today you are quite weak, quite poor. So you expect, may I have a future life with abundant of food, abundant of facilities, may have a luxurious life in my next birth. So that may be the Bhavatanha. We can say like that. But on the other hand, Bhava Tanha, from the practical point of view, is more than that. There you can say, okay, you can't simply be satisfied in the present moment. So always there is something missing. You want to do something else. Always you want to become someone. Still not fulfilled. You feel something missing. So this is because of Bhava Tanha. Where you are not feeling perfect. You are not feeling happy. You are not feeling satisfied. So you are always searching for something new. Always wanted to become someone. Say you have a good house, good wife, good husband, good children, good car, good job. Are you still satisfied? So you can ask the question from yourself. Are you quite satisfied? So say for example, you are in Sri Lanka. Then you have everything. And are you satisfied? Now suppose your friend come and tell you, okay, there's a good opportunity in Australia, why don't you migrate? And there are new opportunities in Melbourne, so why don't you migrate to Australia? So he is now putting new ideas. Now you are thinking. So you had a good house, you had good children, you had a wife, you have parents, everything was all right. But now you want to migrate. You want to have something different. So you want to become someone, you want to become an Australian, you want to become a resident in the Australia. Now suppose you are in Australia. Now suppose someone else come and say, see this new, what's this, his name, not Bin Laden, right? What's this, the American president, new president?
Is it Trump out there?
No, Trump has gone. Joe Biden, right, okay, Joe Biden. So Joe Biden is a good president. Now someone come from US and he does a lot of marketing. And he is now promoting Joe Biden and tell, okay, why don't you migrate to US? And then now while being in Australia, now you are thinking, so this Australia is, you know, nonsense. So they can't handle things properly. Why not I go to USA? Why you are thinking like that? So likewise, we always are not happy about the present moment, present state. Always we want to become someone else. We want to become something. We want to become something else. So this is the Bhava Tanha, constantly driving us, constantly taking us to somewhere else, making us unhappy, unsatisfied in the present moment. So if we can recognize this unhappiness, if we can recognize this driving thirst, this craving, then we can say this is the Bhava Tanha. This is the desire to become. So if you are able to recognize that and to let it go, then you can calm down. Then you can avoid any kind of an agitation, avoid any kind of unsatisfaction. You can be happy. You can feel fulfilled. You can feel satisfied. So that is what Buddha mentioned. These people are simply following craving. Uno loko atitto tanha dasu. Or the people are typically, they feel unsatisfied. They feel incomplete. And they become slaves to the craving. So that is how Buddha mentioned. So therefore we need to check in our own minds how we are being driven by craving. We are being driven by this Bhava Tanha. So that is how we got to remove that Bhava Tanha, or to recognize that Bhava Tanha, and not to become a victim of Bhava Tanha. Yeah.
Question number 4, this is sitting mindfulness. Dear Bhante, thank you for the valuable guidance given for us to start the mindfulness practice and to progress in the Dhamma path. This program and the forum is very useful for most of us who are novices to this practice. I have been practicing based on your guidance for some time and having success in establishing mindfulness regularly while in sitting practice as well as during walking. During sitting, I start focusing on my breath and can detect the differences in the in-breath and the out-breath. After some time, I can observe the full body of the breath and then the gap between the in and out processes. At this point, the breath starts fading away and I become subtle to a point where I cannot differentiate the in and out phases. But the mindfulness is clearly established at a distance to this process, and the attention naturally shifts to the body postures and the various elemental characteristics in the whole body. I've been practicing for months along this way, and now it seems quite familiar. Even though every sitting is a new one, the overall processes seem to converge to these steps and phases. When I become more familiar and trained, it seems I expect and kind of know what is coming after each phase. I also start getting confidence that this is the way the process rolls out and gets into the next steps. Now my monkey mind starts to doubt that if I am premeditating and reaching these phases, since I know them quite well. Also, this is a form of conditioning. I want to avoid thinking any issues with the practice and the methodology, but these things come to my mind and I thought I should write for some advice. Thank you for your guidance, Bhante, with metta. That's the end of the question.
So actually, I didn't get much of a question there. Basically, you are doing well. You are able to recognize the path and to develop to some extent. Because if you are able to get some details of this very equanimous state, so that indicates the defilements are fairly subsided. Say, for example, while walking. So if you are able to see how weight transfers from one leg to the other leg, or what is the and how you feel on your toes, how you feel at your ankles, how you feel at your heels, and how you feel at your toes. So likewise, so if you are able to see such kind of details, so that indicates you are in the correct path, you are in the proper position, because you can't get such detail when your mind is fairly hindered because of the five hindrances. So all the five hindrances has to be fairly subsided, then only these sort of very neutral information are going to be available for you. Now you are not under the influence of sensual desire, not under the influence of say ill will, so you are not in the doubts. So don't entertain doubts, as you said, you don't need to entertain doubts, and rather you are continuing your practice. So the practice actually will clear the doubts. So before we practice, there are so many uncertain areas, so many gray areas. But as we develop mindfulness, as we practice satipatthana, so that is why Buddha mentioned nyayasa adhigamaya. So you yourself will understand, okay, this is the path. This is the something to do. This is the correct practical approach that I need to further develop. Currently I am developing it, still I am not, say, capable of fully comprehending it. But anyway, this is the path to follow. So likewise, the kind of a confidence is going to be developed. So you are now getting such taste, actually. You are getting such a glimpse of that confidence. So just continue your practice and this confidence may further develop and the path become quite evident to you. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 8, sitting mindfulness. Most Venerable Bhante, after walking meditation, I sit down and listen to the sounds I hear. Within a short time, I observe breathing, and it is very thin. It was, I think I stopped feeling breath after a few seconds. Then I was on that free moment without doing anything. At that time, I felt sleepy, and I suddenly awoke by shock and came to the previous stage. It is exactly like when we sleep while traveling on the bus and wake up by shaking. It has happened continuously, and I observe sleepiness to come when I have a thought. Sometimes it has two or more thoughts, but when I observe it closely, it stops by one thought and wakes up immediately after feeling sleepy. The whole time the meditation, I got this experience. I was able to sit 50 to 55 minutes before, and now it is very difficult to stay more than 35 to 40 minutes. One time I stayed 50 minutes, and that time, the last few minutes, I didn't feel sleepiness. And it was a very nice awake moment. I feel mind is brighter than before when the time I wake up. parents or not? That's the end of the question.
Chatu, could you repeat the very first paragraph where the problem is mentioned?
It's not very clear, but I'll try read as best as I can. After walking meditation, I sit down and listen to the sounds I hear. Within a short time, I observe breathing, and it is very thin. It was, I felt the breathing stop after another few seconds. Then I was on that free moment without doing anything. At that time, I felt sleepy, and I suddenly awoke by shock and came to the previous stage. It is exactly like when we sleep while traveling on the bus and waking up by shaking.
Right.
It has happened continuously, and I observe sleepiness to come when I have a thought.
Good, good.
Sometimes it has two or more thoughts.
Fine, fine. So basically, I mean, this is not a bad thing. So it could happen due to many reasons, and I need to actually figure out how you have come to this level. I mean, as we going through Anapanasati, even this can happen. Say you simply recognize the arising and passing away nature of the in-breath and out-breath, or the subtle aspects of the in-breath and out-breath, the element characteristics of the in-breath and out-breath. This can happen actually. Probably you might not have so much of theoretical knowledge, understanding, but the way you are practicing it can give the insight. And as a result, mind might let go of the whole process and feel like a jerk. Feel like you lost the direction. Feel like you lost the address. You feel like you have lost the footing. So it appears like a jerk. It can happen. So you don't need to be afraid of it. So it's a matter of familiarizing with it. So assume that the breath has completely stopped or completely disappeared. So at that time, if you are able to maintain your mindfulness without a specific object, you are not putting your attention to the breath, you are not putting your attention to the, say, foot or any of the bodily sensation, and there are no thoughts either, but you are fully aware, fully conscious. Mind is not established at any place. You are not associating anything as such. Mind is free. So this appear like kind of a foreign thing. This appear like kind of an alien experience. Appear like kind of a cutting off from the thread of a kite. So you lost everything. So mind has no footing. So that is why it is kind of a jerk. So see whether are you experiencing the same thing that I am explaining. If so, it's all right. You can continue. Don't be afraid of it. Your mind has this nature. Mind has this capacity. Mind was always grasping something, always holding something. But now, because of the practice, mind has completely let go of everything. So there is nothing to hold, nothing to associate. See whether this is the thing that you are completely experiencing. You can clarify your experience. You can further, explain your experience in these terms, then that indicates that you are in the correct track. So then you can continue. You got to further familiarize with this state. You don't need to be afraid, but rather familiarize this state. It may appear quite boring at the beginning. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 8. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I have a general question. Last Monday, when I got up, I had this great feeling of relief, or as a feeling when you resolve a problem, or feeling very light. This is not Preeti Sukha, as I've experienced Preeti Sukha. This feeling continued until today morning. Today morning, as I had a group chat with my siblings, I noticed my kelis moving or getting heavy. Venerable Bhante, would you be able to explain what this feeling I experience is? Thank you, and much
thanks
to you. That's the end of the question.
So, rather than I feel the feeling, now you can understand as you are talking with your siblings that you feel heavy. So, that is where the grasping has happened. So far, you are in a fairly lighter state of mind. So, less grasping, but now you are able to see how the mind is burdened, become heavy because of the association with the siblings. So you can return back to this lightness, spaciousness, this lighter feeling, relaxed feeling, and that might be much useful, fruitful for your practice. So it's very difficult to immediately say, okay, this is the exact feeling that you have, say, experienced according to this is the, say, assume there's 100 types of feelings, and I am figure out, okay, this is the, okay, 54th one is the one that you have experienced. It's difficult to say like that. So rather, it seems like this is a kind of opening in the mind has happened, but unfortunately, because of the association of the siblings, again, you have lost it. Again, the mind has become burdened. Again, mind has become heavy. So you got to recognize that heaviness. Again, the attachment has happened. The grasping has happened. Now, simply let go of that grasping. Let go of that detached attachment. And again, come back to that lightness. Come back to that opening. Come back to that cool feeling. Tranquility, calmness, peacefulness. And that is much better. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8. This has got two parts, walking and sitting. Walking part. I try to do walking meditation practices daily from this year onwards. I managed to continue the practice for about 1 hour, doing it mostly on the tile floor. I noticed the sensation of different places of the foot, roughness of the carpet, and smoothness of the tile can also be noticed. Transferring of the body weight from right leg to left leg can be noticed. And then this is sitting mindfulness. After the walking practice, I begin the sitting meditation. Now I can continue the practice for 1 hour. At the beginning, the in and out breathing can be noticed. Out breathing is shorter than in breath, and after 10 minutes, the breathing feeling starts to disappear. Then different sensations in inner parts of the body can be noticed. That's the end of the report.
Can you repeat the last part, Chatu?
After the walking practice, I begin the sitting meditation. Now I can continue the practice for 1 hour. At the beginning, the in and out breathing can be noticed. Out breath is shorter than in breath. And after about 10 minutes, breathing feeling gets disappeared, or sounds like disappearing. Then different sensations in the inner parts of the body can be noticed. That's the end.
Yeah, good. Now since you are able to notice those inner sensations, you can look at them as well. You can start to watch them as well, observe them as well. Now you are coming in the proper path, but unfortunately the sensations are evident only at the last stage of your practice. But now it will be available to you more earlier as you develop. What I'm trying to tell is, now say these inner feelings or inner sensations are apparent to you only after 1 hour. But now you feel like getting up. You feel like stop meditation. So you can't continue. But now as you further develop your practice, what happens is, it may not take 1 hour to make apparent. Within 45 minutes, then these sensations become apparent, being evident. So from that point onwards, so without paying attention to the breath, now you can see what is really happening to these various sensations. So how they are arising, what are the most prominent ones, and try to observe them. Try to focus your attention to those sensations, and that becomes your Mula Kamathana, that becomes your primary object. Yeah.
Sorry, but this is the last question. Do we have time? We'll just sort
yeah,
of
fine. Yeah.
Okay. Question 8. This is a theory question. Dear Venerable Bhante, in today's Dhamma talk, you mentioned about moral shame, its application on the mind, on emotions. If something like this has happened on the mind and emotional level, how can one correct it? Much merits with metta. That's the end.
How can one correct it?
Yes.
No, actually, so what is there to correct? So say there is an emotion, and emotion can be looked at as an emotion. Say, for example, you feel quite unhappy about a situation. You feel angry. So, I mean, there are different levels actually. We can say, so if you are able to guard the senses, there's a less probability that you become angry. If you are, say, maintaining clear comprehension, mindfulness, so the level of anger may be less because you are able to recognize the anger at its earlier stages. So if you are not supporting it, then you are able to overcome it quickly. But there are still exceptions. There are still that you become quite angry very quickly and you lose your control and you maybe even blame someone. Still, it can happen. But understanding this emotion as an emotion is the important thing. It is not yours. You don't need to possess it. You don't need to say that it is my anger. It is anger. There are various causes. Again and again, those causes are being strengthened. As a result, anger has arisen. So your mind becomes agitated. And again, there are causes, certain nimittas, certain signs, marks. And that marks are supported again and again. So the anger is arising. So the anger is overwhelming your mind. So you become emotional. So if we can sort of carefully see this picture, so then we can unentangle. So you don't need to condemn yourself for just because of this everything happened, still I am not pure and all blah blah things. Rather, when it happens, if you can simply honestly and humbly, if you can see, okay, still I get angry, still this is how it happens, and what are the real causes, how can I overcome this, and just forgive yourself and try to sort of take care of yourself, then I feel you don't need to worry about having emotions, but you can use emotions effectively to further improve yourself, to minimize bad traits or unwholesome traits in your mind, latent tendencies in your mind, and this is the way that we can overcome emotions or the defilements. Yeah.
That ends the questions for today, Bhante.
Yeah.
I'd just like to wind up the session. Firstly, by thanking Bhante for giving up valuable time for this session, and also to pass our merits to you, Bhante. Also to all the organizers and people working behind the scenes to make this happen, as well as people seen and unseen participating in this program. And lastly, most of all, to all the participants, because without you, this program would not happen. With that, I'd like to end the session. Theruvan Saranai.
Theruvan Saranai.